Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
/7:55 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer with The Athletic, and this is 7:55 is real, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. And I'm with my co-host, Eric O'Flaherty, former Braves reliever. What's going on, Eric?
Not much. How are you holding up today, Dave?
I'm good, man. It was a hell of a weekend series in San Francisco. The first two games obviously did not go the way the Braves hoped, but I thought the third game, it was one of those where it was such a good win that it doesn't make up for the first two losses, because you obviously lost two out of three. But, man, they had so much momentum from that game going into Arizona, and then they did what they should do against the Diamondbacks. They kicked the shit out of them last night in the series opener. So, but I thought that Sunday game was really encouraging for the Braves and for anybody that was kind of jumping off the bandwagon, because they beat a hell of a team in San Francisco, man. Watching those Giants for a weekend, watching them, you know, every inning, you see why they are, why they've had the best record all year. They might not be quite as deep as the Dodgers, but the pieces fit together as well as any team that I've seen in a while.
Yeah, they're legit. I mean, obviously they're legit because we're in mid-September.
Two weeks
left. and they're still holding on. But, I watched them all year just kind of, you know, knowing how good the Dodgers are, thinking, you know, how are they going to hold on to it? But,
yeah,
they're still doing it. And after watching them play for a series, you know, I see why, too.
And one thing, which you could fully appreciate, I'm sure, that bullpen is damn good, man.
Yeah, they got a lot of different looks.
Yes. They bring us some horses. They might not be as overpowering as some of the Dodgers guys, but, man, I love the way the pieces fit. And then they got, you know, great catcher. Buster Posey calls a great game. They got a good backup catcher. They got some interchange pieces, like the Dodgers do. Their shortstop, man. I know Dansby's had a hell of a year, but watching their shortstop all weekend, God, that guy's terrific.
Feel like he's so underrated.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Yeah. Maybe he's playing out there, you know, being on the West Coast or whatever. But every time I see him play a series, he does something that you know, catches your eye.
He makes
a great defensive play. He comes up to bat in big situations and you don't feel great about it, you know, being on the other team. But yeah, he's been doing that for so I don't even know what year he got called up, but
going to his he's maybe going to 35. His right. Going to his right and making that strong throw, and he makes an accurate throw every time, it seems like. He must have made four of those plays during the series where he went to his right, like that probably only about 8 to 10 shortstops in the league make on a regular basis. And he did it every time, like boom, boom, boom. It was like, you know, and the crowd's chanting MVP, and he's they put on a show. But the Braves, man, they've got a couple of guys that right now, I mean, Duvall, this run that he's continued since coming to the Braves, Alex Anthopoulos, it's going to be tough to beat out like the Giants guy, obviously. But Alex Anthopoulos, with the moves he made, considering he lost Ronald Acuna, and everybody wrote them off when that happened, considering who lost and never got Soroka back, the moves he made at the trade deadline, they might win him executive of the year, dude, because I don't think I've seen a team make as many moves as the Braves did where every one of them has worked out. I know Rich Rod's struggling right now, but he gave them about a strong month.
Yeah.
And the outfielders, all of them, the three they got at the trade deadline have been huge for the Braves. Jock Peterson's not even playing much anymore because the three they got at the deadline have been so good with Soler, Duvall, and Rosario.
Yeah, I mean, it's all panned out. I mean, he did some good moves this offseason, signing Charlie too, you know, but
– yeah.
You lost Ozuna and Acuna, you know, two guys you were counting on to a big part of carrying the load, and went out and got these guys, and all three of them hit. That doesn't happen. I mean, I feel like even when you look at major deadline acquisitions, you know, when teams get a superstar, it seems like it only hits 50% of the time.
Yep.
Teams go out and get some guy that's hitting, you know, 345 with 20 homers from another organization on the West Coast or something. They come over and they're not the same guy after the trade. Or look at Kimbrel. You know, like how could Kimbrel miss? And he struggled with Chicago. For whatever reason, that change of scenery, change of atmosphere seems to – it's still a crapshoot, even if you think you're getting a great player. And all three of these guys have come over and done awesome.
And all three of these guys have come over. Duvall was already having a great season, leading the league in RBIs. But he's gotten better with the Braves. Soler – had started to hit, but was hitting under 200 with the Royals. He's come over and been terrific, but he was starting to hit like the last nine games with the Royals, but he's been terrific. And Rosario was hurt when he came over. And since he got activated 20 games ago, the guy's been on fire.
Raking. Yeah.
I mean, we'll talk a little bit about what he did Sunday, which was just unbelievable. Hitting for the cycle in five pitches, getting hits on four consecutive pitches. The fewest pitches ever for a cycle. We'll talk about Duvall's mammoth homer Monday at Arizona, which that was tremendous. And then Fried's performance Sunday, which kind of got overshadowed by all the hitting in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
Fried stepped it up so big for the Braves on Sunday when they had to have it. Really, that was as close to a must win as you're going to get at this time of the year. And he really stepped up, and the Phillies, coupled with the Phillies' loss, all of a sudden they went from having a chance to leave there tied with the Phillies to instead up by two, and now they're up by three again. In a matter of 48 hours, it changed drastically. So we'll get to all that. First, I wanted to get to something I know you wanted to discuss, though, which was kind of readdress something that Freddie had said to a couple of us, to Bowman and I, two and a half weeks ago, Freddie was talking about, this was after Ozzie got hurt out in Colorado, and all the Braves infielders had played basically every game. Maybe one or two of them had missed a game, but basically they had played every game, and Freddie had started every game, and Dansby had started all but one, but played every game. Ozzie had, at the time, had played all but two. He got hurt in Chicago early in the year. And Riley had played all but one game. He played every game. So they were playing every day, which you just do not see anymore. You see one guy maybe do that on a team, but not, you don't see having four do it. They were leading the league in games played at their positions, basically throughout the infield. And they were making it a point that we're all going to play every day, which Freddie said that this was right after they became the second team in MLB history to have all infielders hit at least 25 homers. Albies had missed two games in Colorado after fouling that Walker Buehler fastball off his knee, being carried off the field, which we thought was a broken kneecap initially. It turns up being just a contusion, and he missed two games. Comes back and homers in four straight games when he came back after the two-game absence. So that put him over 25. So – anyway, at that point, there were 24 games left, and it looked like they had a good chance of being the first team with all four infielders have 30 homers. Dansby has been in a big swoon lately, though, so that's not going to happen. But at that point, Dansby had played all 138 games. Riley and Freeman had played 137, and Albies had missed two at Colorado, so he had played And then the two after Buehler, so he had played 134 of 138 at that point. So Freddie said, he told, because this is a big thing. Freddie wants to, it's not, you know, it's not that he gets on everybody's ass to play every day, but it's kind of goes unspoken. When Freddie's out there every day playing through stuff, you can too. So all the other infielders have taken it upon themselves to do the same thing. So when Ozzie got hurt, Freddie said, yeah, I might have to take, Ozzie, he kidded that, yeah, I might have to take 2 days off so I can hit four homers straight up when I came back like Ozzie did. But he was talking about the infielders. He said, it's a special group. It's amazing. And to have a group of them doing it and have multiple years ahead of them, you know, the fans, they're going to have a lot. It's going to be special. But he was talking about how they've all developed these routines where they can play every day. They knew what they needed to do, whether that's skip infield in the heat, skip batting practice in the heat and hitting the cage, whatever they needed to do, they had their routines and they were following it. And Freddie said, that's the thing. When you're a young guy, you try to find a routine that works for you. Usually as a young guy, you feel like I have to hit BP. I have to take 100 ground balls every day. No, you need to learn how to get through 162 games. That's what it's all about. And they've learned it, and they've learned it quick. And that helps us as a team. We don't care if you hit batting practice at 4 o'clock, it's 100 degrees outside. I need your bullets at 7 to 10 p.m. And they've learned that. They've learned how to get themselves ready. So he said, that's all that matters, being out there every day. So fast forward. Dansby is in this swoon, in a big struggling mightily. So he finally got and Freddie had also said he kidded with Ozzie. He said, when Ozzie got carried off the field, let's just say I was one of the reasons he came back so fast. I said, you better go back to the hospital. Show me a fracture. Show me something. I can't have this. He was kidding, of course, but it was stated clearly, you know, that he expected the guys to play every day. If they could at all play, if they weren't injured, if they were just hurt, if they were just sore, they could play. So, flash ahead, and he also noted that Derek Jeter had talked about playing every day and all that. Snit had said that. Snit said how much he appreciated Freddie's work ethic. Snit had said actually a few times that he thought part of the reason these guys were doing so well, the infielders, is where they were playing every day. So he had no plans to give any of them days off if they were hurting or if they said they needed a day off, he would give them one. But otherwise, he expected these guys were going to play every day. And he pointed out Derek Jeter's Hall of Fame speech where Derek Jeter said, I came to play every day. So a long story. I'm sorry, I long-winded there. But to flash forward, Dansby gets a day off a couple of weeks ago because he's been in a big slump. And they thought maybe that would help him. They called him the night before and asked him, told him that we'd like him to take a day off, asked him what he thought about that and everything. And he said, yeah, I want to. And then they also had to ask kind of, or let Freddie know he was going to, because Freddie, you know, has been on these guys and they knew. They told Freddie basically, take it easy on Dansby, you know, don't get on him. But Freddie did anyway. But this all got a lot of attention this week because Hannah Kaiser, a Yahoo Sports columnist, happened to be in Atlanta a couple of weeks during the last homestand doing a story. She did a story on the good story at the time was Dansby got a day off, and she was fascinated with the fact these guys were playing every day and talked to him about it. And some of the quotes in the story kind of struck a chord with people. I think people take things the wrong way online and all that. And they read, and the fact that Dansby was scuffling, I think they read into it that maybe Dansby's has hurt himself by trying to play every day because of the pressure from Freddie and all this. So some of the quotes in her story, people took the wrong way, as they're apt to do. But, and you noticed this too, right? I mean, you said, you know, you wanted to talk about these quotes, so I'll get to those in a minute, but just what's your immediate reaction to this kind of controversy, if you will, about, you know, playing every day and the pressure that people think Freddie's putting on these guys to play every day?
Well, first of all, he's doing it in a joking manner.
Right.
Right. And, you know, that a lot of times that's the best way to get a point across without, I mean, he's not screaming at these guys, get your ass out there, you're playing today. And they're limping out to second base with their ankle wrapped up. You know, I mean, I think that you have to understand that message is we expect you to play every day. And if you're not hurt, you know, if you just don't feel good, we're not taking days off. And that's it. You got to be really careful with it. Cause you know, a guy could take it the wrong way and play hurt, but nobody's playing hurt. I'm not seeing anybody limping around or favoring anything to the point where, you know, you can obviously tell it's affecting their performance. But in a clubhouse, a lot of times, especially on bad teams or teams that aren't playing for much, you'll see guys just not feel like it, you know, and they'll just shoulders kind of sore. And all of a sudden, you know, you wind up taking an extra 20 games off a year. And if that culture exists where it's just okay to just be in there getting, we had a guy, a starting pitcher that was, we called him Kobe Beef because he was just always in the training room, just getting rubbed on. You know, every day it was part of his routine. It was just part of his routine to go lay on the training table and basically make something up because he just needed to be cared for every day.
Yeah.
You know, and his career didn't turn out the way we all thought it could because we thought he was soft. And you got to be out there playing. But the thing that happens is you wind up getting, if your superstar's doing it, if he's taking days off, if he's not playing when he doesn't feel like it, you create this culture where guys do get soft. And if they even have a little something bothering them, like if you look around the league right now, everybody's banged up. Mm-hmm. Every single player at this time of year has something that's nagging them. And the teams that are going to win are the teams that can find a way to roll out their studs, you know, as much as possible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's part of it is you want to create this culture where you tell guys, like, that's what we do here. We're playing every day. And it's not like Freddie's screaming at them, getting in their face, yelling at them that they have to be out there when they're hurt. But if something's bothering you, you have to understand something's bothering everybody. And we're trying to win the division. So he does it in a joking manner where if they're kind of on the fence, like, I don't really feel like playing today. Am I going to tell the trainers I need a day off and have them go to the manager? Or can I tough this out? You know, you want their gut feeling to be, or their instinct to be, I can play through this. I can help the team today. And if you can help the team, they want you out there.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And this goes back to a culture thing. And this is how this was a big part of the Braves culture during their run of 14 division titles. And it was a big part of their success because their superstars played every day.
Yeah.
They basically played every day. They took a couple of games off a year when they were hurt, but they played every day. People think because they forget those who are only familiar with the last part of Chipper's career think that he was hurt all the time, which he was after like age 32, 34, you know, cause a lot of that was from playing, you know, he had an ACL at the start of his career back when ACLs were big deals, but this guy, they forget how much this guy played. Him and Andrew Jones were in there every day. Chipper is the one who passed this on to Freddie. And Freddie also had the work ethic, he says, from his dad, who used to have a blue-collar job, no health insurance, and believed in working every day. And Chipper had it passed on to him from Terry Pendleton, the previous MVP before Chipper, previous Braves MVP. Well, to give you some idea what I mean, Terry Pendleton played beginning in 1986 with the Cardinals. Played 159 games, was hurt the next year, played 110. Came back from that, played all 162 in 1989. Hurt again the next year, only played 121. Came back from that, played 153 in his MVP year with the Braves in 91. Played 160 the next year with the Braves. 161 the next year with the Braves at age 32. So this is just, I'm just giving you some idea where this came from. Terry is the one that when Chipper is a rookie and Pendleton is the third baseman, at spring training, there were days that Terry Pendleton and during the season where Terry Pendleton asked Chipper to help him take his shoes off because TP had such bad back and played with so much back stiffness that he literally could not bend over to untie his shoes in the clubhouse. Chipper would untie the dude's shoes for him, take his shoes off for him. He taught Chipper the importance of being out there every day, what it meant to your team, what it meant to for the other team to see that your guys played every day. They That's didn't take days one. Off. Chipper played beginning in his first year, 140. That was called, I mean, that was his first. That was his rookie year when he played the outfield and all that. And but that wasn't because of injuries. He wasn't in there every day. 140. But the next year, beginning of the next year, 1996, Chipper played 157, 157. 160, 157, 156, 159, 158. This guy was playing every day. That's like one day off a month, basically, is what he's playing, or less. So that's where it's coming from, the culture that I'm talking about. It's passed on. It's expected. When you're a team leader on this Braves team, you're going to play every day. You're not going to be one of these guys that is out with a nagging injury that is just discomfort, but it's not going to hurt you to play. Chipper, I remember distinctly, J.D. Drew comes over to the Braves. J.D. Drew was a superstar, but he's got this reputation for whenever he's got a nagging injury, he's not in the lineup. So he's out of the lineup a lot. Early on, first week of the season, J.D. Drew's out of the lineup. Plays a game, he's out of the lineup again. I don't remember exactly, but it was two different things. He's out of the lineup. Chipper calls him out. Chipper says, listen, you know, in the proper way, without getting confrontational, or whatever, but we ask him about J.D. Drew, whatever. He goes, listen, J.D. Drew is obviously a player that doesn't believe in playing if he's not 100%. Now, I understand that. He goes, but none of us are 100%. We play after you get through spring training, you're going to have nagging stuff. We play through that. That's what we do here. He's a guy that believes in playing 100%, but there's nobody who's going to be 100%. After that day, J.D. Drew played every game the rest of the year. Go look it up. It's his one season with the Braves. He played more games than he ever played in his life. Had the best season of his career, and he was a stud. But he had an unbelievable year that year. Played the most games of his career after Chipper called him out. One other time, Chipper called a guy out. Jason Hayward. He got hurt. They sent him down to Florida to rehab, and this was going on day after day, much longer than we thought it was going to be.
I remember that.
I forgot what the nagging injury was. It was a back thing, maybe. I'm not sure what it was. It was some soreness, a hamstring soreness or something. Chipper said the same thing. He was a rookie at the time. Chipper said, you got to know the difference between playing hurt and playing injured.
Yeah.
If a guy's just sore, he can play. We need you because you're better at 85, 90% than the guy that's going to be in there. He's got to understand that. Jason Hayward was back 2 days later and in the lineup and took off after that. Those are two examples that come to mind.
We made that wild card by one game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I think that's the logic too, is you don't want to create this culture where guys are taking days off because they don't feel 100%. And then all of a sudden you look at your lineup, Riley's out of it. You know, Ozzie's out of it. As another team, when you look at that lineup, but just the confidence it gives you, and it's vice versa as an offense, when you roll out there and Freddie's not in it, you're like, shit, we got to pick up the slack. Guys might try to do more.
Right.
Now, I mean, I know people that haven't been in a clubhouse aren't going to understand really why that's so important or what a difference it can make, you know, mentally and physically in the competitive advantage it gives you to roll your horses out there every day. But I remember we were chasing the Phillies. You roll into Philly, you were getting Jimmy Rollins, Victorino, Howard, Chase Utley, Raul Ibanez, Jason Worth, every time you faced them. There was no hope that you weren't going to face those guys. And they rolled that lineup out there every day. And, you know, a lot of guys talk about it too. Like, that's how you put up your numbers.
Yeah.
And that's part of why guys don't want to take a lot of days off. You know, I'm sure that's why Freddie doesn't, because today might be the day you hit two homers. Even if you don't feel great, you know, baseball is baseball. You could still have a great day out there. But I mean, I completely understand the concerns of guys running out there and playing through stuff they shouldn't, but that's not what he's saying. He's not saying, you know, if you sprain your ankle and you're taped up to your knee and can't move and you're going to hurt the team, don't play. But you create this environment where guys think they can't play and they'll take a day off with just sore muscles, you know, or they're tired. And all of a sudden it kind
of hung over or whatever.
Guys will, if it's allowed, you know, guys will be hungover and you're not going to say I'm hungover. So you go in there and you say my shoulders. Yeah. It's really acting up today. I think I should take the day off, but if you give guys slack, they'll take it. And as your leader, you know, you want him going out there every day and setting that example so that everybody else follows it. Now he's not screaming at guys that you have to be out there. He doesn't do that.
People got to understand. Freddie doesn't. He's not an ogre because he's not high strung and he's not putting pressure on guys in the clubhouse and people aren't walking on eggshells around him. No. He's the most pleasant guy in the world.
He's nobody just loud talking him.
Right.
You say it and loud.
He's doing it with a smile, with that Freddie, with that joking tone.
You say it loud and you joke and you get the whole clubhouse laughing. And it's a really gentle way to deliver the message of what you expect. I mean, that David Ross was the king of that. If you walked into the clubhouse late, you know, something unacceptable, you know, a lot of old school vets might come up and just yell at you, you know, insult you and say some mean shit. And what I'd learn is I'd watch the young guys and they respond to that. Like, you know, David Ross is just an asshole.
Yeah.
So what Rossi would do is he'd just make a joke of it. You know, he'd say something real witty, real funny and get the whole clubhouse just erupting in laughter. The next time you're sitting on your couch and it's 1:30, you know you need to be out of the house by 1:35 to be at the field on time for BP. You think of Rossi and how he's gonna joke about it and make everybody laugh at you, and you're like, shit, I gotta get in the car. I don't want to go through that. And that's kind of the same way Freddie does it, where taking Dansby's jersey down or whatever he did, he's not being a dick and humiliating him in a way that, you know, makes him feel bad. He's just doing it in a way like, as part of the group, we expect you to be out here, and every time you take a day, you're going to get this reminder. Now, that was the team giving him the day off, so it's even better.
Right. And it's I thought Dansby's quotes indicated as much. There was no Dansby was got a kick out of it, you know.
Yes.
And I knew this was coming, and Freddie hung the sweatshirt in his locker, took his game pants, his thing down.
And that's when you ride him the hardest, because the team made that choice for him. And the whole thing in there where it says, you know, now we got to check with Freddie. What they called him to say, like, you know, we really need him to take this day.
Right.
Okay. Don't ride his ass tomorrow because we need him to take a day off. You know, it's not up to him. Just take it easy on him. Not take it easy on him like he's going to go punch him in the face.
Right.
But just don't ride him too hard tomorrow because it's not up to him. But
just let him know that Dansby didn't come to them and go, can I have a day off?
That's why they did it. But then it's even worse for Dansby because he didn't even ask for the day off and he has to take it because the team told him to do it. And it's just one of those things, honestly, that's like a running joke that gets you through the season.
Hey, just going back real quick on JD Drew, I was just looking this up. He had spent his first 6 years with St. Louis right before he came to the Braves. And JD Drew was a stud, man. When he came, he was a guy that everybody's like, if he can ever stay healthy, he's going to be one of the best players in the league, right? In the five previous years, his full seasons in the majors, he had played 104, 135, 109, 135, and 100 games, right, with Cardinals. And, like, he had a year where he played 109 games and hit 27 bombs, hit .323 with 1,027 OPS. If he'd have played all year, he would have been MVP that year. So he comes to the Braves after playing 100 games in St. Louis, comes to the Braves in 2004. Chipper calls him out the first or second week of the season. Probably second week of the season. Dude ends up playing 145 games, hits a career high 28 doubles, career high 8 triples, career high 31 homers, career high 93 RBIs, career best, let's see, 569. Okay, he had slugged 613 in his 109 game season, but slugs 512, 886 OPS. But, I mean, across the board, best season of his career.
Yeah. And, you know, another side of it, too, is you're better when you play every day.
Then gets a big deal with the Dodgers.
Yeah, then he goes and gets a deal with the Dodgers. You know, as a reliever, it was a fine line for me because the more I pitched, the better I pitched, the better I felt, the less, discomfort or anxiety you had out there. Like you were more comfortable on the mound, more confident because you did it better yesterday. You know, the more you sit, the more time there is for things to kind of stir in your brain.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I always heard people riding Freddie for how hard, you know, how much he pitched me, Johnny and Craig. And I'm like, you know, one of the number one reasons I was so good in Atlanta was Freddie Gonzalez.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I was so good there was because I was pitching all the time and you're better, your timing's better, everything's better. You know, if you don't have to take days off, I don't think it's necessary.
Moilo kind of said the same thing about Bobby, right? Even though Bobby pitched him into the ground after he came back from TJ surgery.
Moilo made his name, you know, that,
great. Yeah.
That set him up. And I mean, that made his career that he was able to throw every day.
Yeah. So anyway, some of the quotes in Hanna's story seem to have struck a nerve with people because they wonder if the Braves, and specifically Snit and Freddie, have kind of gone too far with the sort of play every day you're upright ethos stuff. But here you go. Dansby hit .274 with a career best 809 OPS while starting all 60 games last year. He started all 60 games last year in the shortened season. Best year of his career. This year, he was hitting .227 with a .702 OPS after playing all the first 74 games of the year, right? I mean, he was struggling. He kept playing every day, and he heated up, and then he reeled off what's been the best stretch of his career by far. 52 games from June 25th to August 24th, two-month stretch. The guy hit .320, .382 OBP, 13 bombs, 44 ribbies, .973 OPS, raised his overall average .267 and an .818 OPS. So that stretch there, that two-month stretch, that's when we were saying Braves need to sign him to a long-term extension. This guy's going to get a big contract. I mean, you're talking about a shortstop that can do that. You're talking about an eight-figure salary.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden. For that 52 games, one-third of the season, he was on fire. But just when you think maybe Dansby has turned a corner of his career, he's not going to be a streaky hitter anymore. He's figured some things out. He went into a tailspin. This began after that two-day break in the Braves schedule, that kind of unprecedented two-day break, whether it's coincidence or not, his skid began August 27th. Since then, he's hit .123 with one home run and four RBIs in 21 games. Eight walks, 23 strikeouts, .214 OBP, .178 slugging. He's got a .392 OPS, and that's nearly 4 weeks. That's 21 games, nearly 4 weeks. In the middle of that, he finally got a day off, the day they told him to take off, they forced him to, September 10th, the Braves' 141st game of the year, first game that he didn't play all season. All right, takes the day off, and Snit wanted him to not even come in and didn't want to use him at all, and he didn't even pinch hit, had the whole day off. In the eight games since that day off, he's hit .107, 3-for-28, got a double, one RBI, 9 strikeouts. That, in other words, it did nothing as far as if somebody thought that was going to make a big difference in what in his hitting. So his past 15 games, he's 5-for-51. He's hit .098. He's got one extra base hit and a .318 OPS. That's not OBP, .318 OPS. Team went 7-8 in that stretch. I mean, he's a big part, obviously, of their whether they succeed or not. They got all these other guys that are doing great, fortunately, that have picked up the slack in the last few days. And then Riley doing what he's doing, or Duvall doing what he's doing, is having an unbelievable year. But Dansby's a big part of this thing. Fortunately, as you said when we were talking, the defense has never lagged. He's not taking that onto the field with him defensively, and that's commendable on his part.
No, he plays a hard nine in the field every single game. And, you know, that goes back to what we're talking about, too, is even if he doesn't contribute with the bat that day, having him out that shortstop might change the game.
So he's back down for the season, though, a .248 average, .761 OPS, kind of basically his whole career, and his 97 OPS plus, which is just below league average hitter. Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man of the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man of the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Here's some quotes from that story we're talking about. Hannah's story that people were talking about that they really were like, whoa, that doesn't seem right. But he said... I'm just going to find a couple of them. Mentally is probably the most taxing because baseball is such a hard game and it's a failure oriented game. So the mental component is tough. He's talking about preparing every day and playing every day. He said, and Snit was talking about when a guy might need a day off. He said you could just feel it sometimes rather than some heat map can tell you. Ron Washington said, he does the drills with him every day. He said, normally I don't like to use the word frustration, but you could see when he was at the plate, you could see the dejection with Swansby. When you see that, that's when you make the move and give him a break. So the coaches talked about with Snit. They decided that on the evening of September 9th, they called Dansby to ask him how he felt about being left out of the line the next day. Dansby said, I appreciated them calling me, so it wasn't like you're going to do this. Yeah. And they stressed to him that it would only come in the game if it was an absolute emergency. They wanted him to take the day and decompress, just watch the game. And they said once they cleared it with Swanson, there was someone else to call. Again, they were kind of kidding, but they called Freddie for the reasons you cited. They didn't want Freddie riding him thinking he asked for a day off. But they called. Freddie said, "I got to call at 1 a.m. to tell me to take it easy on Dansby." and said, "Freddie, who's the captain of the team, even though he's not technically, formally the captain, he's the captain. Everybody calls him the captain." And Freddie said, "Okay, that's fine. I'll take it easy." So I didn't say anything to him. He said, "But the next day in the clubhouse, Freddie said, I just took his jersey down, I took his pants down, I put his little sweatshirt up, and right when he walked up." Right when he walked in, I was sitting in my locker. He just looked at me and he goes, I've been unfortunately not waiting for this moment today because everyone knows I'm going to get on. Freddie said, because everybody knows I'm going to get on him. But again, this is all said and fun. They're both smiling, laughing about it. Dansby was laughing about the fact that he had to take a day off. He knew he needed it, but he knew Freddie was going to ride him and he was ready for it. So, but it's none of the what everybody's thinking, reading it the wrong way, like Dansby's feeling like guilty or angry, and it's none of that at all.
No.
It's all in good fun, as you explain.
That's the stuff that gets you through the season, is just ripping on each other and having all those inside jokes and stuff. He's not thinking Freddie's going to come beat him up for not playing.
Yeah. And Snit was talking about the infield playing all the time, and he said they play every day. I mean, it starts with that guy right there. He said, pointing to Freddie taking grounders at that time when she was talking to him. Freddie said he kind of Snit said he kind of wills them out there. And Snicker was talking about the kind of the culture, you know, of the Braves and playing all that. And Wash said that culture is a culture that's been in the game of baseball. It's talking about old school. That's what guys did. He goes, it didn't just come here. It was already here. You had the Chipper Jones, those guys, you know what I'm saying? It was already here. And Chipper, like I said, he got it from TP. TP told him early in his career the importance of being in every day. And Chipper said, it's a conversation that I had with many young players through the years, and it's nice to see it carrying over. I think what I tried to get across to Freddie early on in his career and what he's passing along now is that those guys being out on the field every single day does more for the confidence of your team and hurts the confidence of the other team. If they were taking days off, the other team would be like, whew, I don't have to worry about Freddie today, or I don't have to worry about Ozzie or Dansby.
No, you want them seeing that full lineup. Mm-hmm. You know, it just does something for your confidence. If Freddie's not in there, and you feel lucky that you get to pitch that day, you know, and it confidence is everything in baseball. So anytime you see that and you feel like you got a break, I mean, that's just a little bit of free momentum for the other team.
Yeah. And Freddie told a story about a Danny Echevarria 2 years ago when Dansby was on the IL. He had that stone bruise in his heel and missed about a month. And they went out and got Echevarria because none of the backups they had could play short at the level they wanted. So they went out and got Echevarria off the scrap heap. The Mets had let him go, and Echevarria played great. But one day, Echevarria had made a game-saving catch and landed on his elbow. So he was thinking about sitting out the next day. Freddie found him in a trainer's room and explained to Echevarria that he had to play. He said, I know it hurts, but you're not injured. And Echevarria wasn't, and he was just hurting, but he could play. That night, Echevarria played. He had a two-run homer in his first at-bat. He only had 9 all year, but he had a two-run homer that night. And when he got back to the dugout, Freddie was waiting for him. Freddie said, you're welcome. He was smiling. He said, if you're not injured, I expect you out there. That's just how it is, Freddie said. He's talking about, you know, just in general now. So there's a difference between being injured and hurt, in my opinion. If you're hurt, I expect you to be out there playing, because you at 80%, you can still change the game.
Yeah.
And again, that's not injuries that are going to, they're not, he don't want guys to play if they're going to make the injury worse. But if you're just sore and you're not going to make the, and you're not going to, the injury's not going to turn into, you know, a tear from you playing. You're just playing sore. He wants you out there playing if you're a good player, an everyday player.
Yeah. The majority of stuff that guys are playing through is stuff that is just going to be there whether you rehab it or not.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sore hamstring, tight hamstring, you know, a bruise. You could play through a bruise. You know, it hurts. It's inconvenient. You know, it's uncomfortable, but it's not going to worsen. You know, that he's not telling them to play through a torn ligament in their elbow, or they need labrum surgery or something like that. Yeah. So I think that's important to understand is that a lot of guys in the league would take days off anytime they didn't feel 100%. If you want to go deep or win a division, you can't have guys, your lineup has to be out there every day.
And Dansby, you know, has missed time with serious injuries before, or injuries that you couldn't play through. Like the one where he had to have the elbow surgery. Yeah. He's had some serious stuff. He had that stone bruise, couldn't play on. So this is his chance to, you know, he played every day last year, and he wanted to do it this year for 162. That was his goal coming in. But Dansby said, talking about Freddie and that, you know, that ethos and wanting everybody to play. He said, I wouldn't say it's pressure. He goes, it's kind of like our responsibility. This is who we are, and this is who we've become as players. We want to be those people that can be counted on every day. And Austin Riley said, Freddie, he's the captain of the team, and if you're not playing that day, you better be extremely hurt. It's just the way he's wired. He expects us to play every day, and we're going to. So, I mean, I think it's great. I think these guys, they've accepted this, and they want to live up to it. I think it's great. They know the difference between playing hurt and not. And we've seen that getting a day off is not the answer. Everybody out there thinks that getting a day off is the magic answer to a guy snapping out of a slump. And it usually doesn't. It usually is not a big, you don't see a change.
It can be. And if you see a guy visibly slow, you know, or playing sloppy, right, and you know, he's not that kind of guy, you know, I mean, that's when your manager steps in and gives him that day. But you don't ever want to have guys asking for it, because it's just a slippery slope where they start asking for days when they don't need it.
Yeah.
I think that's a culture that's been around for a long time in baseball, and it's really nothing new. It's not like Freddie's only guy in the league,
right,
putting pressure on his teammates to be out there.
Adam Duvall's home run last night. at Arizona. Mm-hmm. It went up on the concourse in left center. I mean, it was a blast because to get it over that wall's huge out there in center field. Like they had, for instance, there was an out off of Rich Rodriguez, who's given up a lot of hard hit balls. He gave up another home run last night, and he gave up a 428-foot double that Marte. That's a home run everywhere else.
Yeah.
Everywhere. I mean, 428 feet.
Yeah, that ball was torched.
Yeah, so that was – but that's how big that batter's eye and that wall in center field is. Duvall hit it over everything. It was to the left that, but it would have cleared everything.
Yeah.
483 feet was the estimate. And if anything, that was conservative. I mean, it was legit every bit of that.
At least.
So it was longer than the one he had hit in a similar spot, but more in left field in Denver, where he hit on the concourse there where almost nobody hits. And he hit the one in Miami before that went off the cart up there where nobody except Stanton hits him, that banged off that metal cart, the food cart up there on the left field concourse. Yeah. So Duvall's hitting tape measure shots, man. I mean, this guy's not hitting fence scrapers. But he said of the one last night, because Snit came up to him afterwards and said, did you feel anything when you hit that? Because, you know, people have told Snit, sometimes when you hit one perfect, it's like you can't even feel it. And Duvall said, that was probably, and he said, I mean, that was the purest ball I've hit in my big league career. Said, I think that's probably all I got. I mean, I don't want to sell myself short, but if I would impress myself if I hit one further than that one. It was his 37th homer of the year. Two-run shot. Of course, he hits almost all the ones he hits are somebody on base, which is also obviously huge.
Yeah.
Raised his NL leading RBI total to 107.
Damn.
He's got 8 homers during a 16-game hitting streak, longest streak of his in the majors and longest of his career, longest active streak in the majors. He leads the majors in home runs with runners on base, 25. Leads them with runners in scoring position, leads the majors, 18. And then there's a stat that Stats Inc. came up last night that was it says plenty about. When your name is mentioned with Hank Aaron's in anything, you're doing stuff. Hank, 25 of Dewey's 37 homers have come with runners on base. That's 67.6%. That would be the highest percentage of runners or of home runs with a runner on base of any NL hitter, National League hitter, with at least 35 homers since Hank Aaron in 1970, when Hank hit 30 of his 38 that year with runners on base, 78.9%. The highest percentage this would be since Hank Aaron in 1970, half a century.
Damn. Yeah. That's impressive. Anytime your name is mentioned in the same sentence as Hank Aaron, you're doing something right.
I mean, considering that what's all happened since then too, the steroid era, all that, nobody ever hit a higher percentage with runners on base than this. So Duvall said, wow, I mentioned that to him, the Hank Aaron stat. He said, wow, I would never be able to think of a stat like that. Obviously, to be mentioned with him, that's pretty special, especially being in a Braves uniform. That's pretty cool. Hopefully, there's more to come. Earlier in the year, he said, there was a stat. I had a lot of three-run homers, something about three-run homers. I don't remember the stat exactly. But, yeah, it's good when you can hit them with guys on base, obviously.
Yep.
The other thing last night, Eddie Rosario hits his second consecutive homers for the second consecutive game. But the one he hit Sunday was part of the first hitting cycle of his career, which is crazy because, well, for a couple of reasons. It's the second by a Brave in a month. Freddie did it one month and one day earlier. So the Braves have 2 hitting cycles this year of the 4 in the majors.
Yeah.
Right? But Eddie Rosario did it, and it had never been done since they started tracking it in like 1900, never been done in fewer than 8 pitches. He did it in 5 pitches. He fouled off the first pitch of the game that he saw. Then he had a hit in every pitch he saw the rest of the game. He only had 4 bats in the game. 4 straight hits on first pitches, and it was 3 different pitchers that he did it against and 3 different types of pitches.
I mean, if it was all first pitch fastballs or something like that, but right. The team tried to adjust. I think he's just in that zone. You know, when a guy does something like that, it doesn't matter what you throw up there. He's on time. He's ready. And yeah, so he fouled off the first pitch he swung at, and then the next 4, he got his cycle.
Yep. Yep. The first one from Anthony DeSclafani, I'm sorry. who was the starter, obviously. He fouled off, foul tipped the first pitch he saw from him. Then he doubled on the second pitch of his second inning at bat off him. Doubled. Then he hit a first pitch triple off DeSclafani in the fifth inning. Then he homered on the first pitch that Zach Littell threw after Zach Littell came in the seventh inning. Duvall hit a two-run homer that changed the whole game, made it 2-0. So that's when they took Sclafani out, brought in Littell. Sclafani was pitching great up to that point. Yeah. It was a pitcher's duel with him and Max. They bring in Zach Littell. Rosario hits the first pitch from Zach Littell for a two-run homer. Or for a solo homer after Duvall's two-run homer. And then he comes up in the ninth inning. They brought in Kervin Castro to start the inning. And he homers on the first pitch of the inning, the first pitch from Castro. He singles. So the last hit he got of the cycle was a single. He already had the double homer and triple.
I always wonder if somebody would stop at first for that.
I know. I like trip because you can make it easy to look like you tripped.
Yeah, because I think the other team would definitely take that as showing him up. But
yeah, that would look bad.
If it's a blowout or something, I know guys would hold up at second on a triple.
Right. Yeah, if you just blatantly stopped, we're like, no, go ahead, throw it. I'm good here.
It'd be funny if the outfielder just held the ball and said, run to second. Stop being a dick.
Or if the scorekeeper called it a double.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure it's happened at some point. Some guys held up at first, but anyway, he hit for the cycle in his 19th game with the Braves. And like I said, it was one day and a month after Freddie did it. And that was after Freddie became the first player in modern franchise history to hit for the cycle more than once since 1900. So Rosario was the first time he hit for the cycle since rookie ball in like 2011. So in a decade. And it was there's only been four this year in the majors. The Braves have two of them. But the crazy thing is before Freddie did it, Freddie had done it in 2016 as well. Kotze did it in 2008 with the Braves. Albert Hall in 1987. And that's it for the Atlanta era Braves. That's it for the cycles. Yeah. And before 1987, the last Brave to do it was 1910. So now you had five cycles for the franchise in 111 seasons, but you've had two in a month.
Yeah, that's how baseball is. Freddie didn't have a grand slam until this year, right? Or last year?
Yeah, it was until last year. Then he hit two in one weekend.
Yeah,
never had one in his career. Two in one series. Yeah, the only other ones in the majors this year, Jake Cronenworth with the Padres, and Trey Turner had one with the Nationals before he got traded to the Dodgers. But anyway, Rosario has been, we talked about, he's been huge, man. I mean, this guy's, what he's done since coming over to the Braves is, his OPS on like 1,100. He's got 10 extra base hits, 6 homers in 20 games with the Braves, like 12 ribbies, 13 ribbies. He's been huge. He's given him left-handed pop. I mean, he's really diminished Peterson's playing time. And Jock had started to slump a little bit. Now Rosario's been in there every day against right-handers. So it's hard to get Jock playing time because Soler is playing so well. He had leadoff last night for the second time in his career. 6'5" guys, but like Stanton hitting leadoff. But it worked last night. So you got him in right. You got Duvall playing center now. And Duvall, he's going to be in the lineup every day. So it's tough to get Peterson playing time, man. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, you got to understand that when you're him too. You can look at, he's been in the game long enough. He can understand that.
So quite a big spot for Rosario to hit the first cycle of his career. He's been in the lineup regularly now against righties through Sunday. I didn't update it after last night, but through against righties, he was hitting .350 with 5 bombs, hit another last night, .825 slugging and a .1238 OPS in his first 40 at bats with the Braves against righties.
I always thought he was a good player. I didn't expect him, to come and do this.
And good outfielder with a terrific, accurate arm. Strong. Yeah. Then Duvall. Duvall's two-run game-changing homer. I mean, this guy keeps doing it. That homer that he hit Sunday. Like I said, I thought it was the biggest win of the year for the Braves. They would have got swept by the Giants. And at the time, it looked when it was a tie game most of the way, it looked like the Phillies might win that day. So it was looking for a while like Braves might leave San Francisco tied. Their 4.5 game lead having been erased in a 5-game span. Your 4 game span, including the off day when the Phillies won, when the Braves had that rain out against the Rockies. So anyway, Phillies ended up losing. They lost late, and the Braves won. So the whole thing changed, but Doobie's 2-run homer got it all started, and it was huge, just straight center. And he's the Braves, you know, the Braves, when they traded for him, he'd been torching them while he was with the Marlins this year. So they knew he was having a great year, but he's ramped it up another notch since he came over here. He's been on fire, man.
We love sitting in that park and he's playing. The Marlins weren't playing terrible. You know, they had a shot to maybe sneak into a wild card or something for part of that year. But I always think, you know, guys like him that have been around get that extra boost and be comfortable. You know, that kind of takes away the whole, how's he going to react to being traded here? Yeah. When you get traded to a team you already played for, it's like coming home. So it takes that out of the equation too. But, yeah, that deal definitely worked out.
And Snit joked after that homer that he hit Sunday at San Francisco, Snit said, yeah, the former team card again, man. And I'd forgotten that Doobie started his career with the Giants. They're the ones that drafted him. He actually played his rookie year, only like 20, 30 games, but he played with them. I asked him, you know, because Buster Posey, I said, Buster Posey and some guys are still here from your days, right? And he said, yeah. He goes, a lot of the guys are still here that I played with. And then he smiled. And, you know, Doobie, he's not cocky at all. He's like the most modest guy in the world. So when he said this, it was hilarious. He said, yeah, a lot of the guys are still here that I played with. And he smiled. He said, so I said hi when I'm running by.
Oh, man. It definitely feels good to get your old team. You know, I did that so the Mariners had put me on waivers and let me go. And I had kind of a rough time there. And we went back. It took, you know, we were American League, National League. So it took till 2011. We went and pitched against them. But BMAC, when we went and played against the Mariners, my first game against them, you know, since they'd relieved me, I definitely had a chip on my shoulder. And he called that game like it was a World Series game. And I think I came in like, you know, up 2 or up 3. You know, nothing that you'd fist pump or go crazy about, but getting me through that inning, he fist pumped and came up and hit me in the chest. Was like, how'd that feel? And you know, you don't want to be petty and you don't want to really admit it, but it feels damn good to get a team back, I guess, you know, that you feel like let you go when they shouldn't have or something like that. And even if it is on good terms, you know, pitching against the Braves in 14 with Oakland, it still feels good. It means a little more no matter what when you know that organization.
Especially when I was talking to Andrew Baggerly, who's covered the Giants as long as I've been covering baseball. He's been covering the Giants almost that long. And he was there when Doobie was there. And he said when Duvall was there, they were shocked at how good an outfielder he became in Cincinnati. Because when he was with the Giants, they always thought, you know, the glove, he's okay in the outfield, but not that good. And they didn't think he would be a good enough hitter.
You know, but that's some of the stuff that drives you too, you know, when you hear it from that team and get let go, it's kind of, I mean, you're thinking about them when you're working, you know, you're thinking about them and what they said you can't do, and you're that much more driven to do it.
So he left and becomes a gold glove caliber outfielder. He's a good outfielder and a 30 home run hitter for the third, and now he's done it 3 times. He might be a 40 home run hitter this year before it's all said and done. So
I keep thinking he's at 40 because he's been at, feels like he's been at 35 or something for a while. And I'm like, you know, he hit one the other day. I thought that's got to be 40 soon. But what's he at, 37,
38? 37.
Yeah, he'll get there. He might get there this week, this road trip.
He might. And with the pitching that Arizona's got out there, he's got 3 more games in Arizona and then 3 in San Diego, which is a tough place to hit him. But Arizona's hitter's park, man. He's raking. So and they're not. And
then after this trip, it's crunch time. Phillies and Mets.
This Max Fried, he has pitched his ass off in the second half, man. I mean, Charlie Morton has done exactly what the Braves had hoped he'd do and a little bit more. But Max Fried, after starting slow, we were all worried about him. He had 2 stints on the IL. We're like, oh, maybe he's come back to earth after last year. You know, full season, he can't get through a full season. Man, he's shut up the critics because he's been so good since late July. After that second stint on the DL, he's been an ace, man. Frontline guy, number one caliber guy. And he's giving you 6-7 innings every time he goes out there now. his game Sunday against the Giants, against the team that leads the league in home runs, best record in baseball. And he goes in there and pitches against DeSclafani in a pitcher's duel and out-dueled him and pitched great. I mean, he just looked, you know, on a windy day out there where it wasn't easy to pitch, you know, in this day game in San Francisco, it could be a little rough pitching. It's a, you know, dry and windy. Pitched great. And the Braves had lost four straight too. So that's why another reason why that I thought that was the biggest win of the season for them. They had lost four straight, the two to Colorado. They had a chance to get swept again, swept for two straight series. So Freed threw 67 strikes and 99 pitches, faced three batters over the minimum in seven innings, and no more than four batters in any inning.
That's dominant. He said, big stopper. You know, I mean, they needed that start too.
He said, we played a couple of tight games here that didn't come on our side. I wanted to go out there and just try to keep us in the game as long as I could. He's so modest all the time. I just wanted to keep us in it and try to come out with a win. Obviously, the guy swung the bat really well. Eddie had a huge game. Doovy had the big homer. Really happy to come out with a win. Then Luke Jackson, who had missed two games on paternity leave, comes in and pitched lights out. He got three ground balls. One of them was called a hit. It could have been an error on Ozzie. With one out, that was ruled a hit, but then he induces a double play to the next batter. So he got three ground balls, three outs. And then Will Smith, after giving up the home run, blowing a save in the ninth inning of Friday's game, which they lost an 11 inning, an excruciating loss. He comes back, Snit sticks with him when I'm calling for him, you know, to change closers, which I still think they should do, but Snit sticks with him. He's got all the faith in the world in this guy. He comes in and pitches great in that ninth inning Sunday, gets two strikeouts in a perfect ninth inning. So I will say he could turn the page. That guy can't turn the page because he can have some ugly outings and come back and not feel and have a good outing.
You know, that's another tricky part of managing a team. Mm-hmm. It makes it a lot harder to turn the page when you're trying to turn the page in sync with a demotion.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and honestly, I mean,
Snit's probably word this late too.
You know, I'm sure Snit, if he rolled him out there and he blew another save.
Yep.
Now what do I do? I mean, it's so hard in Snit's shoes to roll him back out there, knowing the criticism he's going to face, but knowing the importance that it has in Will Smith's confidence in himself to say you are a closer and throw him back out there. And, you know, I mean, this team, you'd need a closer. It's tempting watching Max Matzik throw the ball to want to give him that role, but how do you know how he's going to respond to the hand? You know,
I said Luke Jackson.
Luke, you know, can handle it, but Luke had his adventures closing too. And
yeah,
there's just
a different pitcher now. He's better, but
yeah, there's going to be unlimited second guessing no matter what move Smith makes. But I always appreciate that in a manager. The hardest bullpen to pitch in is the bullpen where when you struggle, your role changes every time. It's almost impossible because it's just reinforcing that you sucked yesterday when your spot comes up today and you don't pitch. I mean, it's just another thing that gets in guys' heads and makes it harder to come out of.
And even though I said he should change him, I also can see why he wouldn't, because it's not like there's 2 months left in the season. Mm-mm. There's 2 weeks left in the season and you are right there on the cusp. I mean, you got to win to get in. If you lose him now, there's not enough time to get him back. If you lost him 2 months in, you could sit him, you could demote him for a few weeks, bring him back after he had some great outings as a setup guy. If you wanted to do that, you demote him now. There's not enough time to get him back. You got to go with who you're going to go with now, you know,
right. And he can't conquer that beast in the eighth or seventh inning.
Right.
And then you know, so when you do call
postseason,
right. So it's so tricky because you're trying to win a division, but if you're going to have him close and he's your guy, he's got to conquer that beast of the ninth inning. You can't have him pitch well in the eighth, because if he has two good weeks in the eighth and then you throw him back to the ninth, he's still got, can I handle the ninth hanging over him with the fans, with the manager, with himself. I mean, it's so much trickier to manage a bullpen than people give it credit for, but you know, I understand the concern. There's been some blown saves. I wish I was watching the whole game on Sunday because I didn't see him pitch. I wanted to see, you know, when I watch him throw, everything's coming into right-handed hitters. He throws his four-seamer into him. He throws his slider. It's almost like, you know, if they sell out, they don't have to sell out on a pitch, but they can sell out on inner half. Uh-huh. I really think if he could dot a four-seam down and away, especially late in the count, he would just freeze right-handed hitters. It's a tougher pitch to throw for some guys. I think that's why he lives inside with his four seam, and he's got such a good slider that, you know, he can get away with it. But I watched that Solano at bat where he gave up the homer to tie the game.
Yeah.
And he threw a bastard 1-2 slider, and Solano took it like he'd seen a million of them, you know, like it was just nothing. He was obviously sitting on the pitch. For me, it's, you got to read that cue and do something else. And you definitely can't throw a slider in the zone after that guy tips that he's sitting on it. And that's the mistake he made. He threw one in the zone. It came into his bat. But allowing him to eliminate that half of the plate and not have to cover away, that's going to be what happens with Will. Is it's, the homers are going to hurt him. You know, I mean, that's eventually a guy's going to cheat enough to that slider in or be able to handle a fastball in because he's already looking inside that he's going to get burned. And that's what he normally gets hurt with, is a homer or a big hit from a right-handed hitter. I think if he could dot his four seam down and away, they'd see it down, they'd see it away, and they'd be looking slider, and it just lock him up. And I don't know if he can make that pitch or not. That's why I wish I watched him pitch and see if he made an adjustment or if his stuff was just better.
Snit said of Max in that game, by the way, he said, that's a big win after the last 2 days with the, what these guys went through. He said, Max, golly, Max was awesome. Awesome. Fried has a 1.80 ERA in his last 10 starts, 63 strikeouts and 11 walks in 65 innings. I mean, that's ace stuff there. He's 5-0 with a 1.71 ERA in 9 starts since the beginning of August, and the Braves are 8-1 in those games.
Yeah, he's got – I don't think big game phases Max much.
Yeah. With him and Charlie Morton, you are you can go toe-to-toe with anybody with your 1-2 now, guys, in the postseason. Anybody. Yeah. I mean, I know Scherzer's great, but the Braves have hit Scherzer before. When Scherzer's been in Cy Young years, the Braves have hit him. They know they can hit him.
Yeah, and that's what I like about Max, too, is I think when he struggles, I don't think it's mental. I think it's, you know, he's just off mentally, but he always shows up and competes. He never looks, you know, timid or not aggressive. His mechanics might be off. He might be showing the ball or having trouble finding the zone, but I don't ever see him scared, which is one thing I love about him, especially going in the playoffs.
Snit said, Max is special. He's a front end guy. He's a, as you know, what baseball guys say, he's a guy. That means he's a
dude.
He said, he's a guy. He goes, he just continues to mature and get more confidence. That was really good today. It was great. It was a great day to pitch, a beautiful day here. That's kind of, you make this place really cool is days like this. It was a tremendous atmosphere. That's beautiful. And he said it was a great pitching matchup. Really well pitched game on both sides. Glad we came on top. Dude said the atmosphere was as close as you're going to get to the postseason without being in the postseason. And he said, because you got two teams that are fighting, that every game is huge for. Everybody on the field knows how important it is to win the game. And you could tell every out was big. Every run was big. He said, as the game went on, I started to realize, man, scoring runs here is tough. So that was big to be able to get on the board and then let Max do his thing. He was going after dudes today. It was impressive to watch.
Yeah, he showed up. Him and Charlie for me. And Noah's, I don't know why Noah keeps coming out of the game, you know, at 70 pitches. Maybe they think he's not built up yet. He's looking decent.
He didn't look that good last night, man.
He was slider wasn't there.
Yeah. Slider wasn't there. I mean, still throwing. He said he has no doubt that he can get it back for the postseason. He said he's just got to keep getting stronger. But the slider just wasn't there last night. I don't know. They need him.
Yeah.
They're gonna need somebody in that third spot. I mean, if Ian Anderson could do it. You know, he's been sketchy too since he got back, but he's showing some signs, but they need a third guy.
Ian's out of the he's out of that zone where nobody's seen it before. So that second year, you know,
that over the top, unusual delivery, and
the awkwardness is gone. So now he's got a pitch and that's a hurdle he'll figure out. But yeah, I mean, I think that I attribute a lot of him not being as dominant this year is to people have seen it. They know what to expect. They can talk to each other about it. And a lot of guys have had a look at him, especially in the division. So it definitely gets more challenging, but he'll figure it out.
Well, Braves are going tonight with a bullpen game. Not something you expect to see this time of the year, but hey, the Giants do it. And they're going to start Jesse Chavez. You know what? I like it. Rather than Snit feeling like he's got to start Smiley or he's got to start Tukey. It's like you tried that. You've tried it so many times. And he just wants Jesse to get him off the ground, as he says, and get a good first inning. Because a lot of times both those guys have had trouble in the first inning or second inning.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're down 3-0. He's confident that Jesse can get him at least an inning or get into the second inning maybe. And then maybe you bring in one of those guys or anybody. You got 12 guys in the pen, so it's not like you're short. You know, you got an extra guy down there right now. So, you know, and you're not worried about – it's not like you're facing the Giants. You know, these guys, they obviously got a couple players, but I kind of like that he's not feeling compelled to go with either of those guys at this point of the season. It's like, okay, you tried that again and again and again. And you couldn't do Kyle Wright or Mueller because they each pitched this weekend, so that didn't work. So,
Chavi will be up for the task. He's going to be feeling himself. He likes to start. He likes to, He likes to take the ball and be out there to start the game. He'll be ready to roll. I wouldn't be surprised if he went two or three, even though Snit said one.
Yeah. Snit said just go play the game. He said he'll let him go as long as he can go. So,
yeah, he might go six.
That dude, you never know.
You never know with him.
So it's going to be interesting. And the Braves got a chance. Now they're up three. They got a chance to keep, getting close. Their magic numbers down to 11. Well, you got 14 games left. Magic numbers down to 11. You got 6 games left on this trip.
Try to get home with that thing at 7 or 8.
Or 13. I forget how many games left. 13 or 14. Let me see. San Francisco, we got 3 Arizona. 3 more in Arizona, 3 in San Diego. Oh, plus the suspended game. There's the other one.
Okay.
That was in the bottom of the 5th. Braves are down by a run, and it's only going to be 7 inning game. So, Friday.
Colorado's going to have to fly and play 2 innings.
No, talking about the Padres game.
Oh, got you.
That the Braves are going to make up in San Diego before the start of Friday's series opener.
All right, I got it.
They won't play that Colorado game unless they need to. If they need to, the Colorado's going to have to fly to Atlanta to play that one game. How do you think the Rockies are going to play in that game? Like, if you're a pending free agent, you got to fly to Atlanta to play a meaningless game for you guys, and you're about to become a free agent.
Well, I mean, it'll definitely depend on the leadership.
Yeah.
Because if you're a manager and you want to motivate your team, you use the spoiler route, especially on that game, you know, because they might respond to the intensity. If the Braves need that game to get into the playoffs or win the division, you know, it's going to be a huge game for them. Colorado could show up. But if you got bad leadership, they could also just show up, just checked out, like, fuck this game. You know,
I already had a flight to go home. Yeah. I already had booked a flight the day after the season ended to go home. And now I got to go to Atlanta.
That's going to come all down to leadership. And if you're Atlanta, you hope they have some bad leadership and they show up not even, you know, just completely checked out and ready to go home.
Stories like, can't make it. Sorry. Not going to be on that trip. I got a sore foot. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll talk again on Monday or Tuesday or no, Friday in San Diego, I guess. Yeah, we'll do that.
Sounds good.
We'll see how the Braves do in the rest of the series in 3 more games in Arizona. Got a chance to make some hay. 755 is real. We're out.